This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's the Adam Gold Show. Thank you very much for making us part of your day. Although it could be unintentional, you never know. Dial stuck, electronic problems in your car. I don't know.
You never know.
Fat fingers. Yeah. You push something, other button, and it's like, well, here we are.
Your spouse insists.
Look, my wife listens all the time. No, she doesn't, ever. But some of her clients do. My wife's a hairdresser. I don't know if you know this.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, my wife's actually, her shop's not that far from where we are. And a lot of her clients listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's very nice.
Yeah. I also get asked a lot for, do you have any dirt on X team or whatever? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I don't.
Inside info.
If I had dirt, we would just spew the dirt on the air because what are we hiding? So anyway, I'm Adam Gold. That's V to the Victoria. That's Victoria producing the program. And we got there's a very busy show. We got a great weekend of football ahead. A little bit of President's Cup action. It is in our state here in North Carolina. And even if it isn't going to be a knockdown drag out, theoretically it could, but unlikely to be. We got a lot of stuff to do, so we're going to cover a little bit of that. And a lot of football. I mean, mostly football today. And maybe some other things. And we might even start with some other things. So, let's go. I saw the story late last night. I woke up this morning and I was just incredibly confused by the story we're going to start with. The Boston Celtics are going to be looking for a head coach for this season that begins in about a month. Ime Udoka, first-year head coach last year, took over for Brad Stevens, who bumped up to the front office when Danny Ainge was ushered to the door. Did an amazing job last season. I mean, by the second half, they were just awesome. Now, they didn't make it to the... Did they made it to the NBA Finals?
They made it pretty far, yeah.
They made it to the Finals. They lost to the Warriors in the Finals.
Right, yes.
But second half of the year, they were just phenomenal. They really kind of figured it out. They were the best defensive team in the East and one of the best offensive teams. They might have been both best in both areas in the second half of the season. And a lot of that was credited to Ime Udoka. So, but he's facing a one-year suspension by the team due to a consensual, intimate relationship with a team staffer. Here's Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN on the story.
Ime Udoka is facing disciplinary action with the Celtics. I'm told a likely suspension, a significant suspension for what's being termed a violation of team guidelines. Boston is still discussing what that suspension might look like. But this is a Celtics matter, I'm told. This is not a league issue. This is an internal Boston look at Udoka and this violation of team guidelines, but certainly jarring for this Celtics organization. This was a first-year head coach who took Boston all the way to the NBA Finals. But I'm told at this hour, he is facing a significant suspension for what, again, is being described as an apparent violation of team guidelines.
All right, so more information has come out. It was a consensual, intimate relationship with somebody who also works for the Celtics. And the suspension is likely to be the full season. The Celtics have gone out of their way to say that he is not being fired, but that it is simply going to be a year-long suspension. So here's my thoughts on this. When I saw the story, all I could think of, okay, I'm confused.
Yes.
Because a consensual, intimate relationship Whereas, and shouts to all the Twitter jockeys. If I did that at my work, I'd be fired.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because your work is just like being the head coach of the Boston Celtics. I get it. Maybe you're the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs. I don't know what
Who
your
knows?
Workplace is like. Stop it with that. Actually, you know what? I don't know if we here at Capital Broadcasting have that policy.
Yeah, I don't know.
I legitimately do not know. Okay? But I do understand that there are companies with no fraternization rules. I get it. And in some cases, people will leave the company if they feel like, okay, this is a person I want to spend
real,
a lot of time
real.
With.
Yeah.
Right. So in order to not lose my job, let's go get another one. So I understand all of this. And even if you don't have a policy, it's probably good personal policy to avoid workplace relationships.
Sure.
With all of that said, obviously none of this happens in the restaurant industry.
No, not at all.
None of it at all happens in the restaurant industry. Anybody who's ever worked in the restaurant industry understands this.
Yes.
Right? But
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
But
you can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
Are we really essentially firing Ime Udoka?
Yeah.
For a consensual relationship? So this is the bells and that went off in my brain. There's more to this story.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot more to this story.
If it seems shady.
Right? Because, again, the Celtics aren't kneecapping themselves. The number one assistant to Udoka is now the head coach of the Utah Jazz. So they're going two layers down in the organization because of the late nature of this. And no, I don't believe Brad Stevens is coming out of the front office to be the head coach. Although, I mean, maybe. I wouldn't completely rule it out. So there's got to be more to this story because, again, there's zero chance that a young head coach who did so well in year one is getting fired for hooking up with Janice in accounting.
Exactly.
Right? There's just no chance that's the reaction in spite of what your company policy is. I mean, if you have that company policy, you can simply say the relationship has to end. We're going to fine you $50,000.
Yeah.
And now we're starting the season.
Done.
You could just do that. You don't have to suspend him for a year. But something must have happened.
Uh-huh.
Something. This is not just, hey, they went to a company cookout and, you know, one thing led to another.
Things got hot.
Exactly.
Nope.
That's all I'm saying. And again, shouts to all you who think your job or my job is the same as Ime Udoka's. All right. Remember last week when NBA Commissioner Adam Silver was pressed on why he was just fining and suspending Phoenix Suns owner Robert Sarver for a decade-long, actually more than a decade, long history of misogynistic, abusive, racist behavior?
Yes.
Right? There was a press conference with Silver, and the reporters are like, so why'd you only do this? Look, we'll probably play the Silver clip from that a little bit later, but it was clear for those who heard it that Silver wanted to do more. He wanted to do more than fine Sarver $10 million and suspend him for a year. We outlined the equivalent. I did the math. If you or your family, let's say you have a family income of $150,000, which, depending on where you are, is either, hey, I wish I had that, or, damn, that's not a lot. I don't know where you are, but I'm just using that as a guide. If you have a family income of $150,000, that is a $129 fine.
Nothing.
I mean, it would, well, I wouldn't say nothing, but,
yeah.
I mean,
not a lot.
You could figure that out.
Yeah.
The problem here is that Silver works for the owners. The owners don't work for Silver. Silver doesn't lord over his employer. And that is the problem. And there are rules and there are limits to what Adam Silver can do. And he hit Sarver with the max. This is built in. This is the most I can do. I can fine you $10 million. That's the max. And I can't. I heard somebody say, well, they should have banned him for life. Well, he can't.
No.
So he did what he could. But that doesn't mean that Silver did not apply some back channel pressure here. It doesn't mean that he was upset that the highest profile players in his league, Chris Paul, who, by the way, plays for the Phoenix Suns, owned by Robert Sarver, LeBron James, Draymond Green, didn't all rake the league over the coals based on their apparent lack of punishment for Robert Sarver. I think Silver was probably happy with that. Also, he was probably happy with some corporate pressure that was put on Phoenix. PayPal threatened to end their relationship. They're the jersey sponsor for the Phoenix Suns. Anyway, yesterday, Robert Sarver announced that he was going to put the team up for sale. Here's Jay Williams from ESPN.
Key, let me tell you why this is really happening, right? So internally, there's a lot of things going on. So when your second largest stakeholder of the franchise speaks up, right,
money
about, hey,
talks,
we don't tolerate this type of behavior.
Yeah.
You know, we want to see action off of it.
Yep.
When one of your largest sponsors in PayPal withdraws their money, yeah, right, at the end of the day, you start saying, you know, what's best for this organization? That, by the way, I can still sell for billions of dollars compared to what my entry fee to this market was.
Yes, and there is. This is such a penalty for Robert Sarver. This is the beautiful thing about being that rich, that the penalties work in your favor.
Wow.
So he bought the Suns for $500 million. I believe that's the number, right? He's going to get at least $2 billion for his share of the team, which is not 100%, but he is the majority owner. I think he owns 75 or so percent. He's going to get $2
billion. Wow.
Tough. Man, it's tough to be Robert Sarver. It's tough to be a crusty old...
fill in the blank.
Blank hat... owner.
Mm-hmm.
I cleaned that up as best I could. So there you go. That's where we are with that. Here's a good one. And when I say good one, I mean terrible story. But this is our world.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why there's so much garbage here. The NHL is set to open the season with games October 7th and 8th. So we're, a week and a half away, right?
Mm-hmm.
In between the Nashville Predators and San Jose Sharks in Czechia. That's the new way of saying Czech Republic.
Hmm.
It's called Czechia now. The Czechia foreign minister has sent a letter to the NHL saying that due to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Russian players, they're terming it, are not welcome.
Wow.
Okay? Now, they have had discussions about flat banning those players from entering the country, but it hasn't risen to that yet. But it might, depending on what the NHL does, I guess. I don't know. We have not yet heard of an official NHL response to the ban, but each of the two teams, Nashville and San Jose, has one Russian player. For Nashville, Yakov Trenin is pretty good, you know, grinder depth forward, but has been a starter for them for a couple of years. Probably, I think, has a handful of goals against the Hurricanes. So he is Russian. And Andrei Svechnikov's brother, Yevgeny, plays for the Sharks now. So are they going to leave those two players home?
Yeah.
Look, this is not the first sport that has essentially put a ban. The NHL is not doing this, but this is not the first time that we have seen bans for Russian players. Actually, Russian and players from Belarus were not allowed to play at Wimbledon, right? They banned, Andrei Medvedev, Victoria Azarenka, who's from Belarus. They were not allowed to play. In fact, the winner of Wimbledon, forget who it was. I don't want to get the player wrong. So I'm just going to say the winner, the winner of the ladies singles title at Wimbledon was a player who plays for Kazakhstan, basically because Kazakhstan hired her to play for Kazakhstan, but she is Russian and lives in Moscow. And at the U.S. Open this year, the punishment was not you can't play, but the punishment was if you are from Russia or from Belarus, we will simply not list your nation. We will not recognize your nation. We will not ban you. Anyway, it was silly to ban Russian players for anything. And there was some talk of why doesn't the NHL ban Russian players toward the end of last season? Why are we punishing the athlete for something that their nation does, even if they are supporters of Vladimir Putin? It just makes no sense to me. The difference in the story is that if there is any country that gains enormous amounts of national pride, or any person who gains enormous amounts of national pride from the positive exploits of their athletes, it is Putin. So I understand you think it's a punishment of Putin, but it isn't. So it was silly for Wimbledon to do that. It will be silly for these players to not be able to play in Czechia. And I'm curious what the NHL is going to do. If I'm the NHL, I'm going to ride for my teams. I'm going to ride for the players. And I'm going to say, look, even though it's money, I mean, they're getting some money to do this. But I think the PR hit is worse. You don't buckle to that.
No.
Now, again, I understand Czechia has got good intentions here. You're anti-war, you're anti-invasion. I get it. So am I. We have the Stand With Ukraine on the front door of our station,
we do.
Right? But banning players is wrong. Let them play. So if I'm the NHL, if you're going to ban two players, then we ain't showing up. You can stage a club game instead of watching the Predators and the Sharks. All right. A University of Utah student was arrested yesterday after she threatened to detonate a nuclear reactor on campus if the Utes lost this past weekend to San Diego State.
I saw that.
Right? This is a story.
Yeah.
It's actually on ESPN.com, the only reason I'm mentioning it. First, that's a lot of pressure to put on your football team.
Yeah.
That's like, wow. Second, I don't know if the Aztecs are any good. I have no idea. But that's a high level of disrespect to put on San Diego State football. Like, if we don't beat them, I'm going to blow up the world.
We're going to nuke you.
We're going to nuke ourselves.
Yeah.
Because the nuclear reactor the student was talking about is on campus.
You're going down, too.
Right? It's on campus in Salt Lake City. The third thing is, what the hell is wrong with us?
Yeah.
This is the level some people go to? By the way, Utah won 35-7, so whew.
We're safe. We're safe.
My God, what is wrong?
I know.
All right, I need to lighten the mood a little bit. The news today is just dumb. Pretty strong weekend coming up of ACC football. We're going to talk about this a lot today. We've got UNC hosting Notre Dame. Ross Martin of Inside Carolina is going to join us in less than an hour to talk about that. I mean, look, I know Notre Dame's not great, and Carolina is basically half of a really good football team, but who cares?
Yeah.
Carolina's 3-0. Notre Dame is Notre Dame. The game's at Keenan Stadium. It's going to be gorgeous Saturday afternoon on national TV over-the-air network. You don't need cable. All you need is an antenna, and you can watch this game. I know people going to the game, so that's going to be fun. Clemson is at Wake Forest. This is a great football game. I hope. I hope it's a great football game. It wasn't a great football game last year. Clemson, with all of their struggles, was way better than Wake Forest. And Wake has not been as good yet. So, again, I'm drawing no conclusions. I'm keeping an open mind about everything. But that's a great football game, and it's the first hurdle for Clemson. We always talk about hurdles for other schools. It's the first hurdle for Clemson in a two-week set of hurdles to in order for them to win the Atlantic Division. I know Florida State will be a hurdle also, but at Wake, home against the Wolfpack the following week, State is about to rout UConn. That's going to be ugly. Duke is at Kansas in a battle of unbeatens. Yeah, this ain't the first week of the season. This is week four. Duke is at Kansas in a battle of unbeatens. This is not the Champions Classic, mind you. Still, it is 3-0 Duke at 3-0 Kansas, and that's just kind of cute, so I'll just leave it there. Virginia Tech with a double dose of home as they host West Virginia tonight. Virginia Tech has struggled, but Virginia Tech also became like the first real darling of Thursday night college football on ESPN. They essentially made their program playing Thursday night games. Now, Thursday night games now are lost because we also have an NFL game tonight.
We do.
So, and we'll talk about that briefly here in a second. But Virginia Tech, home to West Virginia. West Virginia, by the way, looking to go 2-0. No, they lost to Pitt in the opener. West Virginia looking to go 1-1 in ACC play. So that's a good game tonight. Then tomorrow night, Virginia is at suddenly relevant Syracuse. So, again, another good football game. All right, moving on real quick. We are going to talk Panthers-Saints with former ECU star Terrence Copper in a few. He actually does a show online for the Saints because he played for the Saints. But this is a chance for the Panthers to, with a division opponent here, just to show something. I think we all know where this Carolina team is ending up. We know how the story ends.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 wins, give or take, right? There will be a new head coach next season. Maybe there will be a new quarterback. I'm not saying there will be, but maybe. We don't know how this is going to play out, and it is way too early to make that call either way on Baker Mayfield. So let's hear his thoughts on week 3.
I mean, you can look back and think about certain plays that make a difference in the game. But just for us, big picture-wise, when you talk about narrowing the gap, let's not lose our heads. It's 5 points total within 2 games, but that means we're really close. That just means we're not doing our job well enough in the little things to overcome that and to be in a better position. So for us, it's playing each play, and that being the most important one. Really just a singular focus about just doing our job, preparing, knowing the team we're preparing for 100%, but then also this has got to be the best week of preparation when it comes to knowing our game plan throughout the season. So we just have to continue to improve and just overcome our own mistakes.
Look, in the National Football League, if you hinge on we're close, mm-hmm. you're not close.
No.
So games are generally close. Not surprised that the Panthers only lost to the Browns by, 2? I'm not surprised they only lost to the Giants by, 3? Mm-hmm. Whatever. I don't remember the... I think it was 3.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not surprised at that. I will point out that the Browns aren't that good, and the Giants aren't either.
No.
So, like, close to teams that are in the bottom, I don't know if the Browns are a bottom 10 team. I think the Browns actually have half of a good team. And maybe they'll have a really good team at the end of the season when the serial creep is back at quarterback. But right now, they're just not that good.
No.
So I'm not low. Well, we're close. Nah,
no.
Not really.
And I don't care what he says, because division games, I've been watching them since 95. Yeah. You can say you have a strategy, sir, but that goes out the window, whether you're at Bank of America or not.
They are. They are at BOFA this week. So if they don't want this season to spiral completely out of control and play before a whole bunch of empty seats, and they are in the first of a three-game homestand, they have to be better this weekend. Or, I know it's going to sound weird, how about just being fun?
Yeah.
The Tar Heels, who have won three games. The Tar Heels, I don't think they're great, but you know what they are?
Fun.
They're an enjoyable watch. You can at least be that. You can at least be enjoyable.
And it should be great weather, so it's another opportunity for good football on a good weather day.
I hope it's not ruined by the two teams. It's the Adam Gold Show. I am Adam Gold, V to the Victoria on the ones and twos. Why didn't we play this yesterday?
Well, because he says, do you remember? So we have to get through the 21st day.
First of all, I'm not sure if that was planned or not, but if it wasn't, that is as quick a response to that, as sharp a comeback to that as anybody ever had.
You're welcome.
So, well done. Already paying dividends. Victoria running the show here. All right, we have multiple football games we might be able to get into here with a former East Carolina star who was All-Conference USA as a senior in 2003. Heck, we could even get him to tell stories about playing for Coach Steve Logan, my friend. Terrence Copper played with the Cowboys, Saints, Ravens, and Chiefs in the NFL. He is with Believe, which is an online, network of all sorts of team-specific shows. He does a show called Believe in Saints on Believe Network. It's pronounced Believe, but it's spelled B-L-E-A-V Network. And the Pirates host Navy this week. Terrence Copper, how are you? That's the longest intro I've ever done. How are you doing, man? Do I have him? Oh, there you are. We found you. What's going on? How are you?
Nothing much, man. How you been doing?
I've been doing fine. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes, sir.
I know we're going to talk about the Saints and the Panthers, but before we let you go, I do want to ask you about East Carolina's start to the season, and they host Navy. And if I'm not mistaken, aren't you part of the broadcast?
Yes, sir. I do the pregame and postgame show for East Carolina.
All right. So the person who helped set this up, I mean, they should have mentioned that for me. but that's fine because we can do all this stuff. So Saints coming off a game in which, like, I still think they're really good. But the Buccaneers defense shut them down. What was the reason for the problems offensively, other than Tampa's got a great defense? And what kind of bounce back are you expecting from them on Sunday in Charlotte?
You know what? I think it's a little bit of both from both games. I look back at the Atlanta game, how we struggled offensively early on, and then we kind of turned it on a little later at the end to pull that game out in the fourth quarter. And the same thing happened here. When we played the Bucs, we have to be more consistent offensive line play. I think defense, they did a great job. They did as good as they could do. Of course, they're not getting to the quarterback the way that we would like them to get to the quarterback. But offensively, man, we have to be more consistent. And the first thing we have to do is we have to protect the quarterback. You know, in the last two games, we've given up 9 sacks in the last two games. This game right here, we had 5 turnovers. 2 fumbles, 3 interceptions, and truthfully, we had four fumbles, but we only lost 2 and 3 interceptions. So that right there is a recipe for disaster, no matter who you're playing. When you have that many turnovers and you're giving up that many sacks a game, you could be playing a community college and you're going to get beat.
Well, fortunately for the Saints, the Panthers don't force any turnovers, so maybe that won't be a problem this week. I'm not trying to slam the Panthers here. But what was the mood the thought going into this season about New Orleans?
Oh, shucks. Expectations are high. That was high then. They're still high now. My expectations for the Saints coming into it, especially with all the roster moves we had, I just felt like we was going to – the goal is go deep into the playoffs. You hate to just say, oh, the goal is – I mean, of course the goal is to win the Super Bowl, but you hate to say, okay, we're going to win the Super Bowl this year. You hate to say it like that, but you definitely want to go deep into the playoffs and then let everything else take care of itself. So that was the goal looking into it, coming into the season. It's still there, but we also see we got a lot of work to do. It's not as – we're not dominating teams as we thought we would coming into the season. So we have a lot of work to do defensively, offensively, special teams. Everybody got a hand in this.
Jameis was really good in the fourth quarter in Atlanta. How much of that was Jameis kind of figuring it out? How much of it was Atlanta not being so good? And can Jameis – I'm not going to make people forget Drew Brees, but can Jameis be a legitimate top half of the league starting quarterback?
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
He'd definitely be a top half of the league starting quarterback. I think he has the track record. Even if you go back to last year before he got injured, he had through 14 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions before he got injured. You know, so he was on pace to be a Pro Bowl type quarterback last year before the injury. This year, he's struggling a little bit. I think the first game we played Atlanta, we was able to open the offense up later as the game went on. We was able to open it up a little bit more, get Michael Thomas more involved. This game right here, you know, he overthrew some balls, underthrew some balls. But his picks that he threw wasn't bad decisions. They were just bad balls, in which you can live with that. As long as the decision wasn't bad and the ball was bad. I mean, you don't want any turnovers, but you can live with a bad ball, especially with him having his back messed up the way. I think he got like 3 broken ribs or something like that in his back. You know, so that's tough as a quarterback to go in the game and stand upright in that pocket and take the shots that he was taking and then still be able to have enough comfort in his back to make these throws. So I'm not making no excuses for him, but he do have a lot of different things going against him right now. But once we clean up that offensive line and he starts feeling more comfortable in that pocket, I think he'll be fine.
There's other injuries, too. I mean, Alvin Kamara, I don't believe, played last week.
Nope.
So you need a healthy Winston. You need a healthy Kamara. And with those two elements at full go, it does look like the weapons are there, especially with the rookie Chris Olave from Ohio State at wide receiver. That's a position, obviously, you know well. But Thomas, Olave, Jarvis Landry, there aren't going to be that many teams in the league with a better top 3 wide receiver group than that.
No, not at all. Not at all. And they pose, and they're great for each other because all of them complement each other. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody does something different. Everybody does something well. And it's different from the other receiver, but they all can do all of it. You know, so they complement each other very well. And you hit it right on the head. When you lose Alvin not playing last week, that's one or either the best player on your team on the offensive side of the ball. You know, so anytime you take that type of guy out of your offense, you're going to struggle. Even though we have good running backs that can run the ball, but Alvin is so – he has so many different ways that he can beat you. You can line up him in a slot. You can handle the ball run between the tackles. You can run sweeps with him. You can run screens with him. So it's a lot of different things that he brings to the table, a lot of different elements he brings to the table that we don't have anybody else on that roster that can do that. And it's the same way with Carolina.
Yes.
When you have McCaffrey, you know.
That's the next question. Thank you for eliminating the follow-up because they are so similar as players.
Yes. Yes, very similar. And I see what Carolina is doing. They're really trying to limit the amount of touches that McCaffrey's getting because of the injuries that he occurs early in the season. He really never finished seasons out. But I'm kind of seeing it a little bit in Alvin as well. He's starting to get injured a little bit more. So we may have to monitor his carries or his touches as well, which I think right now we're doing a good job. But you got to worry about those guys when it comes to injuries because, you know, when those guys go down, that is really, especially for Carolina, because at one point in time, I want to say McCaffrey was like 70% of the offense. A couple years ago.
He should be more. All right, so you played. Terrence Copper is joining us here. So take me inside the locker room. I know that everybody is concerned about whether it's Kamara or whether it's Christian McCaffrey. But as a player, and you know you've got a weapon on the field that changes the game and makes it better for everybody else, as a player, how do you balance, we need to keep this guy healthy so we can continue playing going forward, but every play that you run that somebody does something that he would normally be doing, I kind of look at that as a waste. So as a player, how do you balance that mindset? Like, you know you're better when he touches the ball. You know the Saints are better when Kamara touches the ball. Don't you want him to touch it more as a player?
Definitely. As a player, of course you want him to stay healthy because we need him. But when the game is on the line and we actually end that game and we need plays to be made, it don't matter how many times you get the ball.
Yeah.
If the plays are being made, give him the ball. And we'll deal with whatever we got to deal with afterwards. If it's injuries, of course you're not. You don't want anybody to get injured. But you would deal with whatever you got to deal with after. But we just got to win. And I think that is, in truth, that is how I feel like Carolina is now. They got to win.
Yes,
like,
they do.
The coaches on the hot seat. Right now, it's not even about, okay, McCaffrey getting injured. Because if we don't win some games, shuck, the coach ain't going to be there. He may get fired before the season ends.
Uh-huh.
So I think definitely as a player, you're just trying to win. You're not really thinking about how many touches this person is getting. You're just trying to win. But you also are expecting other guys to step up as well because everybody's on scholarship out there. You know, everybody's mm-hmm. getting paid a lot of money to go out there and play this game. So if one guy goes down, or if a play needs to be made, whoever that ball goes to have to make that play, and that's what's expected.
Terrence Copper is joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at TCopper10. Also, at Bleav Network, B-L-E-A-V Network. That's the Twitter, and you can find Bleav on Saints that Terrence Copper is with. So let me quickly ask you about ECU. And I know next time we talk, and hopefully there'll be a next time, and we'll tell stories about Steve Logan. I can tell you stories about Steve Logan. You played for him. But since you're part of the Pirates broadcast, mm-hmm. I mean, I know they lost the opener, and I appreciate that that Mike Houston was so mad about it. But I have seen so many good things in progress in that program. What have you seen now through 3 weeks that gives you encouragement for the rest of the season and they host Navy this weekend?
That we're getting better each game. The way we came out and played that NC State team at the time was ranked number 13 in the country, we should have won that game.
Yep.
Truthfully, we should have won it. That game was really, I mean, of course, it's a lot of things that poses reasons why we lost the game. But the thing that just jumps out at you was we had a block punt for a touchdown.
Yep.
And we missed two field. We missed the PAT to tie it, and we missed the field goal to win it at the end. So, I mean, we had that game in the bag. But defensively, we are on another level than we were last year. Last year, you saw a glimpse of us or what we could be. This year, defensively, we're really stepping up to the plate and making a lot of plays and making a lot of tough plays for our team. Now, when we play Navy this year, when we play Navy, Navy is a totally different team. They're not your regular team. When I say a regular team, they're not the team that's going to be in the shotgun, running the spread, like every other team is doing now in college football. They're this old school triple option, run the ball down your throat, maybe throw it twice a game.
Right.
You know, so if you're not ready for that type of offense, you can get beat by 40. Because if you can't stop it, they're going to keep running it. And because that's what they do. So it don't matter how good a defense is when it comes to playing other teams. If you can't stop this triple option, it can really get ugly and make you really look bad.
Yeah, State, by the way, scored just 14 points on East Carolina's defense. Even on the sideline as an offensive player, how many times would you shout, just tackle the fullback when you're playing Navy?
Oh, all the time. Just tackle everybody. Just tackle everybody. But you got to hit that fullback first because that's the first person they're faking it to or handing it to. So that's what it is. You got to be disciplined with what your job is. You can't go chasing another guy, and your job is to tackle the fullback every time you get it just because you don't think he has it. You know, everybody got to be disciplined. The corners have to be disciplined with their eyes because what happened is they're running, all of a sudden they play action you, and they throw it over your head for a touchdown. And that's only like the second pass that they throw in all game because corners and safeties start getting nosy with their eyes and not really paying attention to their receivers who they got to guard because they're trying to stop the run. They're trying to come up and stop the run so much that they get play action. So everybody has to be disciplined when you play Navy because they are a disciplined team.
That's how Stephen Hill from Georgia Tech was a second-round pick of the New York Jets because nobody could cover him because he was too fast and everybody was too worried about the triple option. Terrence Copper, I appreciate your time. Let's do it again. I'll say good luck to the Saints and that I don't want anybody to get hurt.
Right.
All right, man.
Good one. Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Terrence Copper.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.